Today is Tuesday, October 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up, Hong Kong's leader indicates Beijing could intervene in the city's protests.
Then she would not rule out Hong Kong accepting Beijing's help to tackle the protests.
Also ahead, U.S. President Donald Trump is facing criticism over his plans for American troops in Syria, and China's dispute with the National Basketball Association continues. Well, it's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump surprised both allies and his critics this week by saying U.S. troops would pull back from Syria's northern frontier ahead of a planned offensive in the region by Turkish forces. Turkey said today it is ready for the offensive. The American forces had served as a buffer between Turkey and Kurdish forces who have helped the U.S. fight the Islamic State militants. The Ankara government considers the Kurdish forces to be allied with Kurdish separatists in Turkey. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has been following the reaction on Capitol Hill to Trump's decision on Syria. She joins us live on the phone now to talk about it. Hello, Catherine.
Hello.
Well, welcome, Catherine. First of all, how have members of Congress reacted to the president's decision to pull troops away from the border in Syria, allowing Turkish troops to enter a Kurdish-held region?
I can tell you very shortly, Kim, in a one sentence, not good. This has been a really disastrous move for Donald Trump up on Capitol Hill. He's actually getting a lot of criticism from within his own party, and in particular from Senate Republicans about this decision, who are just devastated to see this abandonment of our Kurdish allies and a really sense of deep concern about what this means for the U.S. battle with ISIS and the U.S. standing in the region. It's just a wave of responses that are coming in from some of the presidential allies like Lindsey Graham, who is usually a big supporter of Donald Trump up on Capitol Hill.
What exactly are some of them saying about this?
Well, what they're saying is that there might be a move back on the part of President Trump because of this. And that really wouldn't be the first time that we've seen something like that happen. We know in the past that the president has announced something on Twitter or in a press conference, gotten some blowback from it, and then moved back on that decision. I'm hearing on Capitol Hill today that some senators are thinking that he may step back. Lindsey Graham also just tweeted saying that there would be deep sanctions, U.S. sanctions, against Turkey if they moved in and retaliated against the Kurds, that Turkey should expect a U.S. response if they ended up doing that.
And what is Trump's defense for doing this?
Is that he actually is a friend and ally of Turkey. At least that's what he said today on Twitter. Yesterday, he warned Turkey not to retaliate against the Kurds. You know, it can change day by day from President Trump.
Also, just looking at what else is going on here in Washington, is this likely to affect the impeachment inquiry?
Well, this is a fascinating moment for a foreign policy decision by a U.S. president. Of course, because he's facing that impeachment inquiry, what we do know is that Senate Republicans have been more than willing to come out and criticize the Syria decision and speak up in support of the Kurds, but have not been willing to say anything about the impeachment inquiry. The million-dollar question up on Capitol Hill is whether that makes Senate Republicans break with him and really reconsider their support for Trump and look at whether or not they want him to be making these rather interesting foreign policy moves when he's also facing these other battles up on Capitol Hill.
Now, from your perspective of where you are now, what are people there saying about this?
They're saying that, you know, this is something that's separate. So far, there has been no mixing of the impeachment inquiry with this Syria issue. Although we have seen something interesting from Lindsey Graham today. He said that he wanted to bring in Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, for his testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee to, quote, get what he felt were real answers about this whole Ukraine call issue. He thinks that the U.S. House of Representatives impeachment inquiry is far too partisan, far too biased, and that Senate Republicans can actually get answers about what's happening here.
Okay, great. This is really, every day it seems to be just a brand new chapter on what's going on. And that's VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. And thank you so much, Catherine, for joining us and updating us.
You're so welcome.
Well, also today, the White House announced that Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan will visit the U.S. on November 13th. Well, Sagar Magani with the Associated Press has the latest on the White House reaction to the impeachment inquiry going on in the House of Representatives.
The White House is finalizing its strategy for fighting the impeachment probe, with Democrats collecting evidence to use in a trial. The administration believes all-out war is the way to go.
Well, first of all, the impeachment inquiry is a scam.
There are already attacks on Democrats like Adam Schiff.
I think he's having some kind of a breakdown.
Attempts to both shift the narrative.
You can't impeach a president for doing a great job.
And to delay the probe. European Union Ambassador Gordon Sondland was to appear for a House impeachment deposition today. His lawyer now says the State Department has ordered him not to show up. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Thank you, Sagar. Well, three scientists are sharing the Nobel Prize in Physics for their work in helping understand the evolution of the universe and the Earth's place in the cosmos. The Nobel Committee today said that half of the $918,000 prize goes to Canadian-American scientist James Peebles, citing contributions to understanding how the universe evolved after the Big Bang. The other half of the award went to Swiss physicist Michel Mayer and Didier Couture Laws at the University of Geneva. In 1995, they announced the first discovery of a planet outside of our solar system that orbits a solar-type star. Since then, researchers have found more than 4,000 exoplanets in the Milky Way galaxy. Well, Hong Kong residents today headed back to work after 3 days of protest, which began on Saturday. Citizens are assessing the damage from violent protests that choked major business areas of the city on Sunday. Thousands of protesters turned out in anger at a government ban on wearing face masks at demonstrations. VOA correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara is in Hong Kong to cover the story. She spoke with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson a short time ago.
So you've been in Hong Kong a few days now. Were there any developments today, any new protests in the city?
Well, today's actually the first day since I've been here that there's a sense of normalcy in the city. So I arrived on Saturday, and there were protests on that day, violent protests, massive protests on Sunday, as well as some protests on Monday when it was a holiday here in Hong Kong. They call it the grave sweeping holiday where they pay respects to their dead. But today is really the first day where I could go to the mall. The mall was open and people were going about their business. I did hear some protests happening outside of the center of the city, but nothing that we've witnessed here.
Now, Hong Kong chief executive Carrie Lam had made some comments today. What did she say, and has there been much reaction?
Yes, well, this is certainly something that moved the story along, because she said in a press conference today that even though she still feels strongly that Hong Kong should find a solution internally, but she did say that if the situation becomes so bad, then she would not rule out Hong Kong accepting Beijing's help to tackle the protests. Now, obviously, this, if it does happen, it will become such an escalation of the situation. And the people that I've spoken to, both pro-democracy activists, they say that if that happens, then that would be the end of the one country, two systems, and it would be something similar to Tiananmen Square crackdown 2.0.
Now, you mentioned that today's been calm. Does it look likely that it's going to stay calm for a little bit, or are there expectations for new protests?
Well, I think there's always expectations for new protests. I think the protesters that I spoke to and the activists, they want to make this movement sustainable. They really are not backing down unless the government fulfills their demands. We've discussed extensively about what those demands are, including universal suffrage. So we don't really see how this is going to end. The people of Hong Kong, the demonstrators, the pro-democracy protesters, they say that they will protest for as long as it takes, as long as the government does not fulfill the five demands, they're not going to stop.
That was VOA's Patsy Whitaker-Zwara reporting from Hong Kong. She was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. This is VOA's International Edition.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
That AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
In more news around the world, China Today objected to the United States blacklisting 28 Chinese agencies and companies because of alleged human rights violations against Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Gang Shuang said the move interferes with China's internal affairs. Groups on the list are forbidden from buying various high-tech parts and components from U.S. companies without U.S. government permission. The U.S. Commerce Department said all those on the list, including the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region Security Bureau, have been accused of being part of Beijing's campaign of repression, arbitrary mass arrest, and spying against Muslim minorities. China denies any deliberate campaign to oppress Muslim minorities, saying it is targeting only religious extremists. Also, controversy continues today to swirl in China around Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey's tweet in support of Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement. Chinese businesses and entertainers moved to cut ties with the National Basketball Association's U.S. franchise. Charles de Ledesma with the Associated Press has more.
Chinese state broadcaster CCTV announces it will no longer air two NBA preseason games set to be played in the country. In a statement, CCTV has indicated the decision was prompted by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver's remarks in Japan following a tweet by Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey last week in support of the anti-government movement in Hong Kong. CCTV says it is strongly dissatisfied and opposes Silver's claim to support Morey's right to freedom of expression. The State Arm also says any remarks that challenge national sovereignty and social stability are not within the scope of freedom of speech. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Thank you, Charles. Well, the UN Refugee Agency warns the battle to stamp out global statelessness is being threatened by growing anti-refugee and migrant sentiment, as well as rising nationalism. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
More than 220,000 people have acquired citizenship since the UN Refugee Agency launched a 10-year global campaign in 2014 to end statelessness. Now, at the midpoint of the campaign, activists welcome the progress that has been made, but note so much more remains to be done. They report at least 4 million people still live without a legal identity, without legal documents to prove who they are. Australian actor and UNHCR Goodwill Ambassador Kate Blanchett says statelessness has a devastating impact on their lives. She says they experience marginalization and exclusion from cradle to grave.
And those of us who have a nationality and have a paper identity, it's often very hard for us to imagine, because we take this for granted, just like breathing, it's hard for us to imagine the degree of invisibility and despair often that stateless people experience.
She says stateless people do not belong anywhere. They are denied an education and medical care. They cannot open a bank account or travel. They cannot get married or even get a death certificate.
It's total invisibility. And the desperate and horrific gift that they often give to their children is that their children too become stateless. So it's a generational problem.
The UNHCR says solutions are urgently needed for millions without citizenship or at risk of becoming stateless around the world. The scale of the problem is particularly overwhelming for the more than 1 million Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh and millions more still living in Myanmar. A recent government decree has put minority populations in India's Assam state at risk of becoming stateless if they cannot prove their citizenship. This, though they have lived in the region for generations. On a better note, the hashtag I Belong campaign has brought global awareness to the issue and racked up some successes. For example, Madagascar and Sierra Leone have reformed their nationality laws. They now allow mothers as well as fathers to confer citizenship on their children. However, 25 countries continue to make it impossible for mothers to confer this right on their children. This remains one of the leading causes of statelessness globally. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm Kim Lewis, and this is VOA's International Edition. In more news, Britain and the EU traded barbs today as British officials said a Brexit deal might be impossible before its scheduled departure from the bloc at the end of the month. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's office said the EU attitude has caused a breakdown in negotiations. In response, European Council President Donald Tusk tweeted, "What's at stake is not winning some stupid blame game." The Prime Minister's office also said German Chancellor Angela Merkel today told Johnson that a deal is overwhelmingly unlikely. The biggest sticking point is how to deal with the border between the Republic of Ireland, which is part of the EU, and the British Northern Ireland. Currently, the border is open, allowing easy transit for people and goods. A tropical cyclone in the western Pacific surged from a tropical storm to what's known as a super typhoon, a Category 5 storm in nearly record time. Super typhoon Hagibis has sustained winds of about 250 kilometers an hour and gusts nearing 300 kilometers an hour. Although it only brushed past the U.S. Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, it did enough damage that President Donald Trump has declared it an emergency. Now the storm is headed toward Japan, and rugby fans all over the world are keeping an eye on it. The Rugby World Cup matches are going on in Tokyo this month, and the last pool play matches will be held over the coming weekend. To find out a bit more about this storm, VOA editor Kate Pounder-Dawson spoke with Brandon Eidlip, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service on the U.S. territory of Guam.
What is unusual about this storm?
Especially west of the Mariana Islands out there in the Philippine Sea, you just see so many typhoons just get into the most favorable conditions. They're developing, they're becoming stronger, and then they're kind of overtaking their surrounding atmosphere and just creating that perfect spot and perfect potential for intensification to a super typhoon status. The thing that sticks out with this one, though, is how quickly it attained that super typhoon status, going from roughly a strong tropical storm or a Category 1 storm in the morning, Monday morning, to a super typhoon Monday evening, which was quite impressive.
Now, at this point, the storm has basically brushed the occupied islands of the Marianas, Guam and the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas. What sort of damage has been reported, team?
Right now, we've been seeing a number of trees that have been taken down up in Saipan. And remember, they were just slammed with the direct hit of Super Typhoon Yutu last fall. And so there are a number of people still living in tents. Not camping tents, but more hardcore tents But even those have certain limits of what they can withstand wind-wise. So they're still in a pretty vulnerable state. And I know you probably heard the term banana storm.
Yes.
It's still one of those common terms out here. Here on Guam, we had more of a banana storm, minimal tropical storm conditions. We had some flooding, of course, a couple of downed fruit trees. But fortunately, up on Saipan, beyond just a minimum damage, we've not heard of anything really serious.
Now, this storm is tracking northward, heading up to Japan, mm-hmm. where rugby fans are in a bit of a panic because of the Rugby World Cup going on in Japan. But how long is it expected to maintain this sort of strength? Is it going to weaken much before it hits the very crowded spaces of Japan?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And there's a lot of eyes up on Japan now. We've got people here. We'll be traveling up there soon. And so right now, the latest track does have it maintaining its super typhoon status. And so we're 155 miles per hour, 160 miles per hour. That's kind of in the top end of what a storm can do. In the case of U2, it did pop up to about 175, 180 miles per hour. It's very hard for a storm to maintain that intensity because it does go through those eyewall replacement cycles, and it kind of affects the intensity. But ultimately, right now here on Guam, it is Tuesday night, and we're expecting to see it probably come up a little bit stronger through midday Wednesday, where we're looking at it possibly peaking again about 160 miles per hour. And then finally, late week Thursday into Friday, we're going to start seeing it slowly weakening. By Friday afternoon, it's still south of Japan. We're looking at 125 miles per hour, but it's 30 miles per hour weaker than its peak, but that is still no laughing matter, 125 mile per hour storm. But ultimately, we're looking at the latest Joint Typhoon Warning Center track does have it passing near Tokyo Saturday night into Sunday morning. It is curving off to the northeast at that point, but steadily weakening. So it's something that anybody dealing with Japan is going to be wanting to watch very closely.
That was Brandon Idlibt with the National Weather Service on Guam and the Western Pacific. He spoke with my colleague, Kate Pounder-Dawson. I'm Kim Lewis, and International Edition continues. Well, protesters demanding action on climate change are in a second day of protest in Britain, Germany, Austria, France, Australia, and New Zealand. Hundreds were arrested yesterday. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson disparaged the protesters blocking traffic in London, calling them uncooperative and crusties, derogatory British slang for environmental activists. Protester Diana Jones in London said his comments were not helpful in holding a dialogue.
We're just ordinary people trying to express our deep disappointment with how slow the process of getting climate change action to occur is taking place, with the government not really listening, not taking it forward on the scale it needs to be taken.
Many of the London protesters slept on the streets Monday night. Fellow protester Beth O'Leary responded to Johnson's comments with a bit of British humor.
Well, I definitely had a shower this morning. And I've got clean pants on, so I don't think I'm a crusty.
A group called the Extinction Rebellion organized the protest to press lawmakers to go further in cutting carbon emissions. The protests are the latest stage in a global campaign for tougher and swifter steps against climate change coordinated by the group, which rose to prominence in April when it snarled traffic in central London for 11 days. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Nadia Taha, and our engineer, Rob McLean. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Enjoy your day.